ATV FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
This is a WATD political forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD political forum. The race is for U.S. Congress, the 9th District. The candidates are Bill Keating, Democratic incumbent, and the Republican challenger, Jesse Brown. The 9th District includes the South Shore, the Cape and Islands, and the South Coast. That's 49 towns and 6 counties. Did I count that right? 49 towns and 6 counties? I'm your moderator, Charles Mathewson, filling in for the venerable Christine James, joined by reporter Lenny Rowe and Donna Rodriguez of PAC TV. We're joined by media partner at PAC TV, providing video coverage. Our format is well known amongst our listeners and politicians. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements, no longer than 2 minutes for the opening and 1 minute for the close. Then we have a round of questions from the reporters and a lightning round where answers are either yes or no, or 2 sentences tops. Please try to keep your questions to around a minute. I know that's short, but it produces good results in our only 40 years or so experience doing this. If you consistently go over a minute, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. Oh, this is a different bell this evening. If you keep talking, our engineer here, Larry, will cut the mic. We've chosen opening and closing statements from the official stand-in WATD newsroom koozie. We'll reverse that order at the end. So Bill Keating will have the first opening statement, followed by Jesse Brown. And as I said, we repeat that at the end. Congressman Keating.
Yes, sir.
Your opening statement, please.
All right. Thank you, Charlie, and thank all of you. Thank you, Jesse, for joining us. Thank all the listeners that are here, and a shout-out to Christine, and I hope you're getting well and back here soon. I come from a family dedicated to public service. 3 generations of police officers, my father coming from our Gold Star family, serving 3 decades as a veteran service agent, my daughter now a local official, and aside from starting a small business and a nonprofit to help child victims of sexual abuse and the Autism Law Enforcement Coalition, I've been elected as state representative, state senator, district attorney, and just 24 months ago, reelected as your congressman. I know that effective public service is not just reciting our challenges, telling people what they already know, or criticizing without a plan. It's actually doing something to help. It's working to pass the Inflation Reduction Act into law, a game changer, which will reduce the OPEC stranglehold on energy prices by the largest investment in clean alternative sources of energy in our history. It's cutting our escalating prescription drug prices, unleashing competitive pricing, capping out out-of-pocket expenses, and putting a ceiling of $35 on insulin. It means replacing a foreign inflationary supply chain with secure American manufacturing and American jobs. It means protecting rights, rights we've had for half a century or more, rights currently being threatened. It means preserving Social Security, Medicare, and a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. I think we all realize we're at a serious crossroads in this country, and as your congressman and as a candidate, I still believe the good in public service. And I believe in a democracy that offers the possibility of changing lives for the better. I want to thank you again. Look forward to this evening.
Thank you. That was Bill Keating, Congressman for the 9th District. Now, Republican challenger, Jesse Brown.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you to WATD for the invite tonight and hosting this forum, and also thank you to Mr. Keating for being here tonight. And also thank you to all our listeners. My name is Jesse Brown. I'm a United States Marine Corps veteran, small business owner, co-founder of a nonprofit that helps veterans in need, and a proud father. Currently, I'm a member of the Marine Corps League and also a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 1822. I proudly sit on the board of the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and the Massachusetts Labor and Workforce Development Board. Being a lifelong resident of southeastern Massachusetts has given me firsthand knowledge of this district. Growing up in Taunton, then enlisted in the Marine Corps at 17, and upon my return home, moved to Plymouth, where I have been a resident for over 20 years. The United States of America is a great country. Today, more than ever, we have a government and representation in Washington that has lost touch with the everyday person they are supposed to represent. We have rampant inflation, the highest in 40 years. The cost of living is out of control. Energy costs are skyrocketing from gas, electricity, to heat. Seniors are struggling. Veterans are fighting for benefits. We have crumbling, deficient infrastructure. Crime is on the rise, and we still have politicians who want to defund the police. We have a crisis at the border that has led to the constant flow of illegal drugs like fentanyl. We have an escalating war in Ukraine. Foreign adversaries are consistently looking to take advantage of us. We hear these issues and many more on a constant basis, yet the same people stay elected for decades. It's time to say no to career, lifelong, entrenched politicians. It's time for a change. I am running to be your new voice in Washington and represent the best interests of the people of the 9th District. Thank you, and looking forward to tonight.
Thank you. That was Jesse Brown. And let's begin the questioning with Donna Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me here this evening. Gentlemen, I'm going to, my first question, first a comment. Words have consequences, as does political posturing, pointing fingers and locking into party messaging versus working collaboratively. I think we can all agree that our political system is at risk and challenged right now. And in some ways, it's become more about parties versus people, collaborations, and working together towards solutions. What will you do as our representative in Congress to lead our political conversations in a more civil and productive manner, to work with other elected officials to face issues, to solve problems, and to represent the people of the 9th District versus any political affiliations? And this time we'll start with you, Jesse.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I completely agree with you. It's been the civility in Washington has completely gone away. There's a lot of division within parties, the Democrat Party and the Republican Party at a whole. So we have people down in Washington, again, as I just stated, that aren't looking out for the best interest of the people of their district anymore because they're too concerned about themselves down there. And they do the political posturing on a constant basis. We see it every single day. And it's putting the people of this district in harm. We see it just with our inflation. We have the federal chairman that comes out today and says, once inflation starts to go down, people will begin feeling better. Well, we understand that, it's fine. But at the end of the day, we have to have people down there that are representing us, that for the best interest of the for us.
Can I ask a quick follow-up?
Yeah.
How would you make a change in Washington to change the tone of interactions and collaborations?
Well, first of all, you have to bring the people's issues down there, and not the issues of yourself. It's a very simple thing. You bring the issues of the people, talking to the people that are in your district, but not the issues that are down there. People in Washington live in a bubble. That's what they're down. Everything is about Washington. I go down there every few weeks or so, and it's the same rhetoric over and over and over and over. It's not the issues that we're living day to day, because they're not involved. Now, what I could do, where I'm involved with the people, you set up town hall meetings. Number one, I think that's very important. You have to be accessible as a congressman in Washington. You have to be accessible to the people every single day. If you're not, you're doing it a disservice, 100%. You should know who your congressman is, and you should be able to see him whenever you want.
Thank you. And Congressman, what would you do and continue to do to change the tone and encourage collaborations?
Yeah, first, Donna, thank you for the question, because we have to first acknowledge what you said, that words have consequences. And I was, I was at the Capitol on January 6th, and I saw firsthand how words have consequences. I saw the results. I saw the fighting. I saw 140 Capitol Police officers and Metro Police officers that were injured. Some of them are never going to back to work again. One of them died as a result of that. Words have consequences. But what do I do personally? I think you have to start with yourself. And there's a myth in Congress. Most of us get along very well together. I work on bipartisan caucuses with members, the opioid caucus, or even something local like the Cranberry Caucus that I started with my friends in Wisconsin, or dealing with H-2B issues as well. I've had Texas congressmen to my home, and we work out. So civility begins one-on-one, and it's hard to hate up close.
Thank you.
Any more follow-up? Okay. Lenny?
All right, thank you. So, good evening, guys. So, we have the Mass School Building Authority here in Massachusetts, but recently I spoke with a firefighter and a police chief who wondered if a similar program could be established for police and fire departments. Should you think, or do you think, that federal funding should be used to help towns construct public safety facilities? We'll start with Mr. Keating.
Well, we have aid to, firefighters. Through Homeland Security grants, the ARPA fund, other funds that we have there, rather. They've been utilized in our district quite a bit. And they're there for equipment. They're there for fire trucks. They're there for life-saving kind of equipment as well. It would be helpful with town governments now going through tough times for the huge infrastructure projects and what it's done to be helpful. But I don't see that right now. I see that the focus we have on these monies going to where they are, where they deal with a lot of technological communications equipment that's there to make sure they're safe. But I think the building of these is going to remain at a local basis, whether they tap into funds the way they do at the state level for school building assistance could be an option of the state. But I don't foresee the actual building construction. We do it in other ways.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
I agree to get federal funding to build public safety buildings. It's just I'm a huge advocate of the public safety sector. So anything to keep our constituency with the latest technology equipment, but also the staff, is very important to keep that funding going towards our public safety. So I would be 100% for giving federal funding towards our public safety.
I guess I just have a follow-up too for you, Mr. Brown. What else do you think needs to be done to kind of help, local towns, like looking at Pembroke, Kingston, considering new public safety facilities at the local level, or, as a federal partner? What can you kind of do to help them go through that process or expedite that?
Being available, number one, and I think, being able to talk. But at the same thing, we talk about the infrastructure aspect. We passed one of the largest infrastructure bills in the history of the United States. And we're still sitting here talking about potholes and roads, deficient bridges, and trying to get money to public safety. The money's there, but it's not in this district.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. That's a great question. I'll tell you that that's a focus of mine. I already passed through the House my legislation dealing with, I'll just mention a few local issues because that's what you wanted to know in this area. And we're waiting for Senate action in the budget when we get back. $2.5 million for the wastewater plant construction in Plymouth, a real priority locally that they need help in. The Old Colony YMCA for early childhood, my legislation got $2 million for that. And that's to help parents get back to the workforce too. Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital locally here, they need help in the emergency room where they're going to have to lay off staff to put money there. I got $2 million through the House, waiting Senate action on that. And Pembroke, which you mentioned, we have an intergenerational community center, $3 million I got for that, for intergenerational work in the community center. So it's a real focus of mine locally. You sometimes have international, national issues, but local issues are just as important.
Okay, Bill, I mentioned just Monday night in our forum for local state rep that I started covering the need for a community center in Pembroke 30 years ago. So it's nice to see that it's finally happening. Now, we find this time of year and political season candidates love to talk about cutting spending. And my question is always, how and where? For instance, Jesse, you said a little while ago that, you know, we need to be fiscally responsible, whatever, but that you would spend money on public safety facilities. So my question is, where would you cut spending?
Well, number one, there's a lot of redundancy down in Washington. So we have a lot of federal agencies where there's a redundancy. Number one, we can look at from the IRS to the Department of Education. There's a lot of redundancy in there. That's the first thing we need to look at. So there'll be agencies out there that funding will be cut from because there's a redundancy factor. It's a simple thing. It's a business mentality that will be down there. When you're seeing a redundancy aspect with these programs, that you need to cut those out. You're still going to get the same response from everybody, but you're going to be able to get more people help because you're not putting the same money to the same things over and over.
Bill, where would you like to cut spending?
You know, one of the biggest races, and this sounds like inside politics, but people should be aware of it. One of the most wasteful aspects in federal spending is our inability to come forth with a budget. Now, this sounds simple. Towns have a budget. The state has a budget. We kill ourselves in the House with appropriations. It's a year-long process, and we keep sending the bills to the Senate. They don't act, and they wait for one omnibus type of bill at the end as a budget where everything's thrown into there. But in the meantime, they have something called a congressional resolution. That holds the funding where it is, but it also locks in what you're spending the money for. So many times, you keep spending money for things that you no longer have as a priority. And because you can't agree with a budget, you're locked into these congressional resolutions that keep you spending money on things you don't want. We try so hard, and when we're in the leadership on the Democratic side, time and time again, we're getting these appropriation bills that go over there and nothing happens to them.
Can I have a follow-up? Oh, I'm the moderator, right. I can have a follow-up.
One other thing, I mean, to cut is a lot of the foreign aid we give to countries, we're still giving over $1 billion right now to Afghanistan, a Taliban-run country. One of the biggest military debacles in the history of the United States, and we're still giving money to them in foreign aid right now. So that's another place that you cut. I mean, it's endless where you can make the cuts.
Okay. I'm a town meeting rep in Plymouth, and it's very difficult to make cuts when you're looking at which teacher is going to go, which cop is going to go, which neighborhood is going to be disadvantaged. So I guess my follow-up is there's an ideal anywhere in government spending is what we as taxpayers like to focus on, but in any area where you have an ideal and then you have to make it happen. So how would you make that happen, Jesse Brown?
Well, like you said, it's a very difficult process, but you need to have the right people in there that will be able to make the cuts. If you have a Congress down there that the majority of the people are not willing to do that and to line their own pockets, then it's never going to happen. It will not happen.
Bill, you've been there for more than a week. How would you make that, why haven't you made it happen? Spending cuts.
Well, you know, we have a rule in the House that it's called PAYGO. So if you're putting in something that cuts revenue or additional spending, you have to identify, this is in the House side, you have to identify an exact area you're going to cut. So that locks spending. Now, that rule's been abused, and the most egregious violation of that was the 2017 tax cut that President Trump put in, that 88% of which none of us as Americans get to see a dollar of that. And guess what? They didn't put the PAYGO rule in for that. And we're paying over $2 trillion, with a T, $2 trillion right now to pay that back. The argument was, oh, it doesn't have to be, you don't need a pay offset for that. You don't need PAYGO for that because, oh, it's going to stimulate the economy and all this revenue will come in and it'll pay for itself. Well, it hasn't. and we're continuing to pay $2 trillion for that tax cut. And when we get back, the Republicans want to make that not just a permanent three-year deal. They want to extend it forever and make it permanent. That's wasteful, and that's breaking the rules.
Donna Rodriguez, next question.
Thank you. And I am going to switch it up a little bit and change the topic to immigration. And we know it's one that's a huge issue, and it continues to be polarizing. Immigrants are coming through our southern borders, and whether by choice or not, are traveling throughout the country. The Boston Globe reported that Governor Baker estimates approximately 11,000 people have come into Massachusetts this year. And as we know, in this district, just over the last 2 weeks, well over 100 people, all families, who were homeless, were placed in on an emergency basis in temporary housing in both Kingston and Plymouth. The Commonwealth does have a commitment to house homeless families through the Right to Shelter Act, and that's what they have done, and estimate that that's going to be continuing across the Commonwealth. And from what we're hearing so far from these folks who are in our neighborhoods is that they are people who are escaping from violence, poverty, and other life-threatening situations. I'd like to know, in each of your opinions, what should be done at the federal level to begin to get a better handle on this from the human rights point of view, versus just taking care of borders. What do we need to do to improve to ensure that this process is fair and is proper for people who are seeking legal immigration into our country? And I believe it's Congressman Keating's turn to start first, based on the last question.
Governor Baker reached out to our congressional delegation just in the last few days, and he sought more federal assistance to help the communities in Massachusetts. And, you know, referencing his comments, he was gave, which he's done before, that humane view that these are people escaping very dangerous situations. They're not here illegally. They're seeking asylum. And he said he will do his part, and Massachusetts will do their part. All that being said, you know, hotels are not the most cost-effective way to be funding this, even in the short term, even in an interim basis, and we've got to do more. We sent out a letter, our delegation, myself and our senators, to make sure that the FEMA agencies involved with the emergency shelter are reaching out to these communities to make sure they're getting assistance and monies for what they've created. So we're acting on that there. I wish I could go into this more. Perhaps it'll come up again tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you for that question also. I mean, it is a big issue in this district, number one, but I talk about this a lot. And what we have right now, you talk about 100 people that have come into Massachusetts, into this district, came down to Kingston and to Plymouth. Every month, we have over 200,000 people coming across the border. Migrants coming across the border. It is a humanitarian issue down there, but the biggest problem is we have a broken immigration system, and we've had that for years. This isn't something that's been 5 years, 10 years. It's been here for 30, 40 years. And again, we've had the same people in office with the same issues over and over and over. And we have to treat them humanely. They're human beings. That I don't think anybody disputes that at all. But the issue at hand is when they're here, you need to stop them before they get here. And I know you said you don't want to, it's a humanitarian issue, but we need to secure the border 100%. That would stop it.
So I'd like to just follow up with both gentlemen.
Go ahead, Donna.
I want to hear what your thoughts and ideas are. What are the steps that can possibly be taken? And we'll go back to Congressman Keating and then Mr. Brown again.
Well, thank you, Donna. In our country now, the immigration issue is being used as a wedge issue, a wedge political issue where, people are spending more time politically using it to drum up fear and concern than trying to solve the problem. And here's the truth. If this is going to be solved, this will have to be a bipartisan effort. The system, I agree, the system is broken. In our office in New Bedford, for instance, we have people are waiting 10 and 12 years to come here legally. So we should get a bipartisan effort forward and speed up the time for legal immigration. That's ridiculous, that delayed process. We need workers here in our country right now for jobs. And we can still strengthen the border and deal with those issues, speed up the adjudicatory process there so that people aren't spending all this time finding out whether they get asylum or not in this country. And so the solution is there, the will to do it and move away from conflict and the terrible discourse we have around this, as well as making sure that we're addressing the problem instead of making it worse is important.
And I agree with Mr. Keating. It is a wedge political issue, but that is the issue, that we have people that have been down there again decades that still haven't rectified the issue. And as he said, 10, 12 years that people are waiting to come here legally. I mean, I have a neighbor from Brazil, and he's been fighting to get his wife here for 6 years. He just left this week to go pick her up to come here. 6 years to get her here. Everything he has done, it's been an illegal process. So we need to streamline that process, number one. But again, first steps first, you need to shut it off. You have to secure that border. We have to get funding to Border Patrol. We have to have more agents down there. I had the pleasure, maybe not even the pleasure to go down there, but I seen firsthand, was able to go down there with the Sheriff's Association, over 200 sheriffs, and see the issues that are there on a daily basis. I also, when I was in the Marines, I was able to work with the Border Patrol. The same issues that happened 20 years ago while I was in is just exacerbated today because of open door policies that we have. So I see the yellow. So
thank you both, gentlemen.
Lenny Rowe, questions for the candidates.
So kind of continuing on that topic too, and Congressman Keating mentioned as well, and that's something that Governor Baker was asking, was that for federal support to quickly allow the state's newest arrivals to obtain jobs. So what can you do at the federal level to kind of help expedite that for especially people here in Massachusetts? Or Congressman Keating, sorry.
That's okay. I'll tell you, we have a seasonal industry in our region, and we need jobs when the season gets hot for our tourism, hospitality industry. So the visas, the H-2B visas, are very important. It's an area of concern. I started the bipartisan coalition dealing with this issue, as a result of the work directly I've done with the administration here, they doubled the number of those visas to get workers here on a seasonal basis. So they'll come, they'll work, they'll go home, and we emphasized in this new plan returning workers, so they don't have to be trained. They come in, they know what they're doing. Many of them work for the same places. Now, on the overall, we have a birth rate of 1.7 roughly in the U.S., and we've been cutting down legal immigration. We need more workers here. So we have to work hard. If we're going to deal with a worker shortage, and it's very real as I go around talking to businesses, we should look at enhancing legal immigration as well as help some of the seasonal, particularly in our area.
And I don't think anybody's disputing the aspect of visas. Definitely we have to, that's at a federal level, something you can enhance those visas, because the amount, I'm not specifically sure how many that we have to date right now, but we have to enhance the amount of visas that we have. But the issue is, that's not really, it's the people that are here right now, that they've come here illegally. So they're not coming from their home country on a visa, coming here working. They're already here illegally right now. So we have to streamline that process for them. If we aren't, again, we have to take care of them. But at the same time, what do we do with them? Nobody knows. We're sitting here. They're sitting in a hotel down the road. Again, 20, 30 years, we still have the same exact issues. Now it's in our backyard, something that's been talked about for decades on the border. What's in their backyard today is in our front yard today. And guess what? It's in our front yard. That's why it's a top subject right now in the 9th District.
Okay, we've talked about spending. Now it's time to pay some bills. So we will take a short break and we'll be right back. Thank you.
This is CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Getting good value for your hard-earned money is more important than ever. When you have aches and pains, good value means getting relief that lasts, like the relief you'll enjoy from SalonPause pain-relieving patches. people that use Salon Pause reported less pain with improvement in mood, sleep, and the ability to work. Life is better without pain. You can live better. Salon Pause. It's good medicine.
This financial update with CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger is sponsored by Dell Small Business. There is one bright spot from the latest inflation report. Here's Jill.
That means an average monthly increase of an extra $140 for Social Security beneficiaries.
Dell Technologies Black Friday event starts early with up to 48% off business PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Plus, savings on accessories and free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Stephen Karidiannis here, conductor of the Plymouth Philharmonic. Don't miss the thrilling Scottish Symphony by Mendelssohn and the North American premiere of Simon Garcia's exciting string bass concerto featuring Susan Hagen, principal bassist of the Boston Pops Esplanade Orchestra. That's Saturday night, November 5th at the Plymouth North High School Performing Arts Center. For details, visit PlymouthPhil.org. Sponsored in part by the Mass Cultural Council with additional support from WATD.
I love this time of year. Rustling leaves, a crisp wind blowing, apple picking for homemade apple pie, a sunny day in a corn maze, a bonfire on a cool night. Cigars, and a half gallon of hot apple cider. Apple pie. We made it ourselves. This has nothing to do with Brennan's Smoke Shop, but everything to do with life. It's short, yet so sweet, kind of like pumpkin spice coffee. It comes and goes like autumn wind.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, Hudson, New Hampshire.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, the very best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store. Message me on Facebook.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack, but not with ZipRecruiter. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/work. That's ZipRecruiter.com/work.
Hey, it's Fitz from the Country Top 40, and if you got a big family like mine, you do not have time for aches and pains. You don't have time to wake up and say, my neck, my back. Here's something that'll keep you feeling good and going, Salon Pause Pain Relieving Patches. Put Salon Pause on sore muscles and joints for lasting pain relief. Research has shown that people that use Salon Pause reported less pain with improvement in mood, sleep, and the ability to work. So get back to the good life, because you deserve the good life with Salon Pause. It's good medicine.
Why wait to save? Dell's Black Friday event arrives early with select deals on top tech to power any passion. The savings start now on the latest XPS and Alienware PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Don't forget, special pricing on the latest monitors, docks, and accessories, including free shipping on everything. Just call 877-ASK-DELL for Black Friday deals. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Hi there, I'm your host, Dog, filling in for the human who's normally here and bringing you the smells and sounds of the holidays, courtesy of Beggin' Dog Treats.
We wish you a beggin' Christmas. We wish you a beggin' Christmas. Dog rest ye merry Doberman, let beggin' you acquire. Deck the halls with strips of beggin'.
Remember, for bacon-loving dog excitement this holiday,
it's beggin'!
Imagine being able to turn your disastrous dental condition into a success story in as little as one day. I'm Dr. Andy Wehmeyer of Contemporary Prosthodontics. We're specialists in dental implants and reconstruction, including the all-on-4 implant procedure. Every part of your treatment can be done in-house, allowing us to perform complex dental treatments easily. This makes Contemporary Prosthodontics unlike any other practice you've been to. Call today for a consultation and find out what's possible. 781-934-2300 or find us at contemporarypro.com.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B.
Good evening. This is your moderator, Charles Matheson, for a political forum at WATD. the races for the U.S. Congress in the 9th District, which is the South Shore, the Cape and Islands, and the South Coast. The candidates are incumbent Democrat Bill Keating and his Republican challenger, Jesse Brown. When we left off, we were talking about immigration, and I would like to ask a foreign relations question, and that is, don't we have people coming to America, to the United States, because we're such a failed country? No, it's because we're a successful country, and they're coming from failed countries. The people who have been put up in local hotels are largely from Haiti. Wouldn't it be a better approach to solve the problems in Central America and Haiti, or do what we can to help them, rather than try to close the border? Bill Keating, you have a lot of experience in international relations. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's got to be part of our immigration problem issue with the broken system. The violence in Central America is extraordinary. The priests are, again, being threatened with their life. Presidents of countries are getting assassinated in their home. In some of the countries you mentioned, they don't have control of their own. They're a country unable to secure itself from drug cartels and criminals. And the U.S. does help. And just as a side note, with those H-2B visas, they're geared to give a certain amount of them to Honduras, Haiti, Guatemala. You know, those are those countries, to give them a little more help. But that is part of the problem. I think our country has to concentrate more on the Western Hemisphere and issues. A lot of them are coming from Venezuela as well. There's an opportunity now with failing Russia, to deal with some of those issues. And
we'll get to Russia.
Yeah.
Jesse Brown.
And I think what you said is that we're not closing the border to legal immigration. We want to close the border to illegal immigration. And
I'm saying all of the attention is on closing the border. Should we put more attention on solving the problem that brings people to the border?
I think we have enough problems here in the United States that we need to solve first before we're solving problems in other countries. Now, granted, yes, we need to go to the foreign countries so we don't have those issues coming here. But right now, we have too many issues in our own nation that we need to rectify before we're pumping more money that we don't have spent in other nations.
Is that a circular argument? We have a big domestic problem with immigration. It costs money to house people, to assimilate them, to keep them out. So why wouldn't it be better to take care of our own interest by taking care of Central America and Haiti?
I just, again, with illegal immigration, what we're talking about, I just want to put something in perspective. Yes. Every month, you take the city of New Bedford and the city of Fall River, the infrastructure they have there, all the people, that's what comes across the border every single month. Now, where do we put them? I agree with you. Where do we put them? That's why we need to stop that. If that border is secure and they're not, we don't have the people here, we don't have the issue. We're talking about an issue that can be stopped. And it has to be a bipartisan aspect. It was a bipartisan issue until it wasn't. And everybody agreed with the wall. Everybody agreed with Border Patrol. Everybody agreed with the technology to stop it. But as of right now, it's not. And we need to make that a bipartisan issue again. And we need people down there that will do that, because obviously it's not getting done, and it's only become worse. But to go to different countries, to go to Central America and do more of our resources, our treasure, to go down there and fix an issue when there's Americans here. We have veterans that are homeless. A third of homeless are veterans, and they can't get in a hotel. I don't think that's right.
Okay, next question, Donna Rodriguez.
Thank you. To bring it back to the 9th District, this is a deceptively simple question that I'd like to ask. What do you see as the single most important issue facing the 9th District, and what will you do or continue to do to address it? And I believe we're starting with Mr. Brown this time.
I think a big one, there's a lot of important issues, but one big one that I think we hear about all right now is the bridges of Cape Cod, that we've been trying to get funding for this for years. Over since the 9th District became the 9th District, the new 9th District, we've been trying to get funding, and we keep getting shot down for it. Again, we passed the largest infrastructure bill in the United States, and we still don't have the funding for the bridges down on the Cape. And it's very important. Those are structurally deficient bridges that are down there. We have people driving over them every single day. I mean, another big issue also is Holtec. I mean, it's more of a localized issue, but it's the whole Bay of Cape Cod of dumping water, the radioactive water out of the reactors into the bay. So that's another big issue. Even though over the last 10 years, over 1 million gallons has already been dumped into the bay underneath certain watches, but we need to stop it from continuing right now. So those are two major issues. I know I gave you two, but those are two big ones that I will focus on.
Thank you. And Congressman Keating, same question.
Well, in the spirit of coming together on issues, I'll start with what we could agree on. Holtec is a huge issue, and it's an issue that affects jobs here as well. I mean, it's an issue of greed, corporate greed, versus an issue of protecting our environment and protecting our economy. Holtec gets to pocket the money that they save if they dump that waste versus trucking it away. That's ratepayer money. It's not their money in the first place. And they're putting our public safety and our fishing industry, our tourism industry, and the quality of life in that area at stake. When it comes to the bridges, I've worked on this issue for years with the Army Corps and the Commonwealth. You got to remember this when you look at funding. We haven't done the engineering yet. There's money for engineering. We got some money from this, but we haven't done the engineering. We haven't done the environmental work. We haven't done the right-of-way takings. So the money will come as this happens. They don't give you money on the front end, and it just sits in a shelf and not used. But quickly, since time's out, we need more workers for jobs. We have to concentrate on our environment in this fragile area, and that is critical.
Lenny Rowe, next question.
So around this time last year, more than 500,000 people were without power due to a nor'easter. What do you think needs to be done at the federal level to help towns respond to these major incidents that seem to be happening more frequently? Mr. Brown?
It's the number one. Again, we're going to talk infrastructure. I think we can talk about the electrical grid. It's an archaic system as it is right now. And, you know, we're talking about going everything electric right now. The current electrical system will not handle that. So we're talking about storms. It's the actual system as it's set up right now. The grid has to be updated. Money has to be put into this grid to work properly, but also withstand those storms. I mean, a basic thing, you always see people cutting trees down near the power lines. I mean, there are a lot of minor things you can do to make sure that power does not go out, but the infrastructure that's in place right now is archaic, as a lot of our infrastructure in this district is archaic.
Congressman Keating?
Well, I think that when you're looking at the investment that has to be made, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, we've done something that's historic in nature, $369 billion to address climate change issues. Climate change is real. Our storms are getting worse. The surges are getting worse. You know, I was just in Scituate the other day, you know, watching just in the last few years how that seawall has crumbled the way it has. We have to make sure that we look at this from a national perspective. And we've addressed it with the Inflation Reduction Act and that investment that's there. I think that moving to cleaner energy is also moving smarter. With our funding. And this gives tax credits to the private side. The private side is going to be a big deliverance. If they're already moving, we're going to accelerate that with this bill. And it will be dealing with not only improving the grid, but doing it in a way that's going to help our environment so that we have more flexibility when we're moving from one area to the other, so we're not overloading an area, underserving another area.
This is a question from one of our listeners. And I will truncate it a little bit regarding our stance towards Russia. The listener has pointed this towards you, Bill, with your experience in Congress and international relations. Have we done nothing more than poke the bear and pushing us closer to thermonuclear war?
Absolutely not. Russia, for the first time since World War II, has made a major aggressive move. They did it in 2014. They did it in February this year. They're the aggressors. They're moving into another country's sovereignty. And the brutality there. I've been to the border twice in Ukraine. I've talked to the people there. The rapes of boys and girls, the torture that exists, the targeting of civilian hospitals and schools. It's inhumane. I've had three hearings. I'm the chair of Europe, the European subcommittee, and I've had three hearings already on war crimes. We brought the prosecutor general from Ukraine. He flew over for our hearing to talk about what's going on. No, Russia's the culprit here. Russia's the aggressor. And we don't want to go over, poke them in the eye. We just don't want to fail democracy at a time where globally it's authoritarianism versus democracy. And the front line is Ukraine and Europe.
All right, let me narrow the question a little bit. We know that there are war crimes in Ukraine. And our heart goes out to all of the people, and they've been incredibly brave. And when Zelensky said no, he didn't need a ride, I think everyone gasped and said, are you kidding? You're going to stand and fight? Great. But is that endangering us in terms of nuclear conflict with Russia?
I think our posture towards Russia right now and their aggressiveness makes us safer, because to ignore that would do more harm to us. We've got to understand what Putin has in his mind. It's not just Ukraine, but if you look at what the Russian Federation said in February in the response to our country and our coalition, they want to move forward further in Europe still. No, I think to leave Putin unchecked creates a greater risk. Now, the good news is this. I know from being on the Armed Services Committee as well as Foreign Affairs, it's so important to have communication. And I think people will feel a little better knowing that our Secretary of Defense, General Austin, has been in touch with the head of defense in Russia. They are in communication to talk about red lines, to talk about problems, to avoid unintended nuclear confrontation. That being said, Putin's in a corner, and it's a frightening place where he could act in a way and has threatened to act in a way that could bring us as close to nuclear war as we were during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Jesse Brown.
Again, I think that we should have people in Washington that are proactive, not reactive. When Russia originally invaded Crimea, this started this whole process. We allowed them to go in and take land from Ukraine during that time frame. After that, the Nord Stream 2, under a certain administrations, was ceased to, once President Biden got into office, 4 days after, that Nord Stream 2 became building again. After that, now again, this is all, we could have stopped it right there. And that's a big part of it. If we stopped that Nord Stream 2, that would have stopped what was happening right now. It all comes down to that. In my opinion, that's what it comes down to. Now, the Russian aggression, for the nuclear, we're not just talking about Russia here, we're talking about North Korea, who just fired 23 ballistic missiles today, and they're a nuclear power. We're sending B-52 bombers, nuclear capable, down to Australia for the threat against China. We have Iran threatening war right now with Saudi Arabia. So is there a threat of nuclear Armageddon? Potentially. But again, we're sitting here and we have people that aren't being reactionary to this and being proactive after things are already happening and trying to play pickup. And I think we have to be strong. Where I agree with the congressman here is that we have to be strong against Putin. We can't let him run all over us, but it didn't need to come to this point as it is right now. It didn't need to.
All right, what would you do proactively? asking, or I gave Bill a follow-up, what would you do proactively?
Looking back or right now?
Looking forward.
Right. If we're going to be proactive, are we just sticking on Ukraine or just in general anywhere?
Nuclear war.
Nuclear war. How do we be...
Let's narrow it down to just nuclear war. Yeah.
Well, we don't want that at all. So I think to be proactive on it is that we right now as a nation, luckily, we are the strongest nuclear... That's a deterrent. We have to keep that, because if we didn't have that, it would be a different story right now. So we have to make sure that we stay strong as nuclear, because none of these other countries are going to stop. They're not going to stop. No matter how many treaties we put out there, whatever it is, we got dirty bombs going to places. That's the bigger issue. So we have to stop. I mean, we have to be out there, have a strong military force and have a presence at all times. That's a big part of it. If we don't show that military presence, we're being walked all over.
If I could.
Yes, go ahead.
Just follow up on a couple of things. I just want to set the calendar straight on things, too. Before Joe Biden became president, Nord Stream 2 was about 98% done. He came in during that time. And I can't divulge everything, but when Russia made its aggressive moves, let me state it this way. There was room for the German chancellor to make a declaration they weren't going to prove forward. But if he didn't, there were consequences that would have been taken otherwise, given what happened. And if you want to look at treaties, Iran is now closer to having nuclear weapons. They're closer in terms of enrichment right now, very close. And pulling out of that treaty, which just centered not on the work of the Quds Force or the Revolutionary Guard, but just on the nuclear side with inspectors coming in, was a mistake. And now we're looking towards a much more swift timetable where Iran could become a nuclear power.
All right, 30 seconds. Jesse, Iran, should we have pulled out of that deal?
Yes, we should have pulled out of that deal, but at what we have right now with Iran, they've been an aggressor since the dawn of time, and we know that. And we still have done nothing to them, against them, or even shown force in any form or fashion.
Okay, next question, Donna Rodriguez.
Thank you, sir. So we're nearing the end of our forum here tonight, so I'm trying to decide which direction to go in. And I think what I'd like to do is I'm going to give both of you a quote and just ask you to respond to it in two different quotes. Jesse, I'm going to start with you. This is a quote of yours. One of my platforms is bringing the power back to the states. There's a lot of things that we need to bring power back to the states and power back to the people, not at the federal level. Can you give me one example of what should come back to the state level, how you see it working, how you would see it implemented and making things better?
A big one right now is the Department of Education. I mean, that's what at the federal level, we already have that where I was talking earlier on the redundancy levels. There's that redundancy where the states and the local level already have these in effect and we're overseeing them. And you can't put handcuffs on the state or local officials because there's a complete oversight. That's what I mean is bringing power back to the people. You can't have those regulations that are consistently out there by the federal government constantly. That it has to be done at the state and local level.
How do you think it would improve things on the state and local level?
How
do you think it would improve things for parents, for students?
Oh, because it would be put in their hands, not being oversight by a federal regulator or somebody that's living in California dictating what's going to be happening here in Massachusetts.
Do you think that could cause problems with consistency across the board and across the nation for standards and practices?
No.
Okay, thank you. Congressman Keating, I have a very different quote for you. President Biden was quoted today as saying, "I'm absolutely confident, just as they did in 2020, the American people will again vote in record numbers and make it clear that democracy is a value that defines us and unites us as Americans." What do you see as how would you define our democracy today with all the challenges we've been facing internally?
I think there'll be a large turnout, number one. That part I agree with. But our democracy is under attack. I was there on January 6th. You saw it on television. We've had the hearings that have further detailed exactly what was going on there. There's efforts to discredit elections. That's the crux of our democracy. Free and fair elections where once that's determined, and it was in this instance, even by Trump's top security persons on election, even by the 60 judges where they brought cases and they had the right to do that, all of them backed up the fact this was free and fair elections. But to discredit that and the peaceful transfer of power is the most dangerous thing I've seen in my lifetime in terms of a threat to democracy. If we don't believe and trust our elections, if we don't have a peaceful transfer of power in our country and discredit, we're on our way far away from democracy into something much more dangerous.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the lightning round, and remember that is lightning. It's quick. First lightning round, Lenny Rowe.
In one word, describe the 9th Congressional District. Congressman Keating?
Beautiful.
Diverse.
Thank you.
Do you trust the voting process, Jesse?
Yes.
Bill?
If it's enforced and implemented, yes.
Donna Rodriguez?
In one sentence, or two max, starting with Congressman Keating, why do you want this job?
You know, I mentioned at the outset, it's sort of in my family's blood.
One or two sentences.
Oh.
Lightning round.
To help.
Mr. Brown.
Change.
Okay, let's go to closing statements. We began with Bill Keating. We'll begin this time with Jesse Brown.
Well, I want to thank again WATD for hosting this forum tonight, and thank you to all our listeners. Being an elected official should never be taken for granted, nor should you become complacent in your duties when representing the people who have trusted you with the safety and well-being of themselves and their families. As your congressman, I promise to represent you and your best interests. Your vote will count towards electing a proven leader. Your vote will count towards dropping the cost of gasoline, dropping the cost of food, dropping the cost of energy. And your vote will count towards reduction in crime. Your safety will always be a priority. Your vote will be for common sense in Washington. Thank you to everyone for listening. I'm Jesse Brown, and I respectfully ask for your vote on November 8th. And if you have already cast your vote, thank you. It will be an honor to serve the people of the 9th District. Thank you.
Closing statement from Bill Keating.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Thank all of you for being here. Thank all of you for listening. Our country is at the crossroads. I think we all realize that. The Republican majority in the House and the Senate, and they're not hiding this, has said they will shut down government if they have to change Social Security and privatize it. They'll do the same to cut Medicare. And that includes one of the greatest things I hadn't seen, thought I'd see in ages, and that's dealing with the prescription drug escalation of prices, which we dealt with. The threat to women's health care, women making their own decision after 50 years in this country of not having it that way, and now their daughters won't have the same ability to make their own decisions. But ending on a higher note, this is a great opportunity this evening. We have things we've agreed on, we've had things we don't agree on, and it was done with civility. And that is what we need more of in our country right now. So I want to thank all of you for making this possible, and I want to ask sincerely the people of this district for their support in a very short period of time coming up. Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to a WATD political forum for the congressional candidates for the 9th District with incumbent Democrat Bill Keating and challenger Republican Jesse Brown. We have talked about nuclear annihilation and the Bourne Bridge. We've been joined by our media partner, the always excellent PAC TV, providing video coverage. Thank you to our engineer, Larry Nelson, reporter Lenny Rowe, and Donna Rodriguez of PAC TV for joining us and asking questions. Audio from this forum will be up on our website, 959watd.com. We have selected cuts from this forum running tomorrow morning and at noon during our newscast. And of course, make sure you vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Charles Mathewson, 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.